the problem. The problem was that Panama technically belonged to Colombia, which refused to sign a treaty leasing it to the United States. So Roosevelt sent a gunboat filled with Marines down to Panama just on the off chance that a revolution might suddenly break out. And darned if one didn't. 2 days later, not only that, but the leaders of the new nation of Panama talked about lucky breaks, were absolutely thrilled to have the United States build a canal there. "Really, it's our pleasure," they told the Marines, adding, "Don't shoot." Dave Barry, 2010. Dave Barry slept here, a sort of history of the United States. Joyce?
Hello. Hello, everyone. If I don't get to see you, it's good to see you all. Thank you. An interesting thing, we were having lunch with Scott's coworkers on Friday, and they asked us if Panama was home to us now, and it is, actually. We're flying home today. So if we decide, okay. It's being slow. I have on the first screen, and you'll see it in a moment, there are three pictures, and one is of a young couple who were in the parade, one of the many parades, last November. Panama has an enormous quantity of holidays in November. It's sort of an off month for government because there are holidays celebrating when the people in Cologne had a protest against the Colombians. There's holidays celebrating the Independence Day from Colombia. There are holidays celebrating Independence Day from Spain, as well as, of course, All Saints and everything else you can possibly imagine. And there are parades in Boquete every other day in November. But this one couple, she is wearing a polera, which is the tradition, one of the looks, and you'll see another photo in here, the traditional dress of Latina women in Panama. And the flag of Panama, an interesting story was that Roosevelt and his cohorts suggested to Panama a flag that had, you know, the U.S. flag in it. And you've seen some of the British colony or previous colonies with the British flag. And the Panamanians stuck up for themselves and they said, "No, we want our flag to look like our own," which is really good. And right now in Boquete, there are thousands of these all over the street. It's really pretty. And then the final picture is I have to show you because we every time we talk to people, they don't know where Panama is. It's right there where the taffy is pulled apart between North and South America. Also, for those of you who went to school when I did and you saw those straight up and down maps of the Americas, they're not. So Panama is actually directly south of Havana and Cuba. And the weather in Panama City is very similar to those two cities. It's in the Eastern time zone, does not have daylight savings time, however. Panama, as you can see, is in between Costa Rica and Colombia. Venezuela's here. And then this is Nicaragua and the troubles in Central America up here, and then Mexico. And so actually Mexico is a long ways away from Panama. Mm-hmm. We have a difficult time finding Mexican food in Panama. If I can find it. Down, is that the right one?
Down to the
I cannot see them in the light. I'm sorry, just a minute. It's not responding to me. Sorry about the technological. So then assuming that we get to the next screen, it has on it some graphs and then some text, which you don't need to worry about the text, about the demographics of Panama. Panama is, even though it's, for instance, quite, it's adjacent to, in fact, we are a very close drive to Costa Rica, the demographics are different. And Panama has, for Central America, a very large percentage of indigenous folks. It has gone up in the last 20 years from 9% of the population to over 12%. And right now it's...
Just making sure we're going 12.
The majority of the folks are of European and mixed descent. And this graph, which I got online from an official demographic site, separates people between European white and European mestizo, and that's sort of a state of mind, I think. Because most people in Panama are of mixed ethnicity, as most people in North America are. with ancestors coming from different parts of the world. And in Panama's case, it mostly of European and mixed descent. And then also there's a fairly large percentage of people of African descent who came to Panama to build the canal in one of the two ventures. For those of you who don't know, the French tried and failed before the U.S. did, and they brought a lot of what at the time were recently freed slaves to do a lot of the manual labor, and then the U.S. did the same later on. And many of them stayed in Panama afterwards and mostly live in communities along the Caribbean, which would make sense since their families were in the Caribbean. There are in Panama areas of, they're called comarcas, roughly similar in some sense of the word to a reservation for Native American indigenous people. And so Guayaba, the Embra, who also are in Colombia, and then the people near us, Nove Bugle, who I will talk about more later. They very large.
Can you point where you are?
Yeah, I'll show you later, but we're here. So Costa Rica, Chiriqui, we live in Chiriqui. And then also Panama is getting more and more. Many Chinese came to build the canal as they came to California, same reasons. But more and more are coming all the time. For those of you who wonder what's, you know, happening in the world as the U.S. is withdrawing, China is coming in really big. And there's a lot of Chinese people, businesses, a lot of presence, construction. And traditionally, most of the Chinese in Panama have lived in Chiriqui, where we are, but they're now all over as Chinese presence has come in. Down button. A few more demographics, and then I have for you a few pictures and then some discussions, as we said, of the problems and solutions in Panama. It is 85% Catholic, as you would expect, being in Latin America. However, and we, the Kinnear, see the nexus of problem. You cannot shake a stick in Chiriqui without running into missionaries. You cannot. And they are fundamentalist, right-wing Christians. So they're non-denominational, Jehovah's Witness, Mormons, Seventh-day Adventist. And, I mean, I email my dad and tell him, you know, it's like the 20th Seventh-day Adventist church I ran into this week, Dad. But and the problem, so they come to Panama because of the poverty and get food, and then they convert and try to turn people into a more reactionary, right-wing political movement. And because of this, Panama's having a very difficult time with a lot of social progress. So gay marriage has been voted down a number of times because of the right-wing stuff that's brought by the missionaries. Even though there's an unbelievably large number of young girls having babies, they will not teach birth control or family planning in schools because of the... this is an ever-growing percentage of the population. And then there are Jewish and Muslim groups in Panama as well. We have a mosque in David, a town near us, and a large number of Jews in Panama. In fact, we've been told by some of our friends that Panama, by percentage, not by number, has the largest number of kosher-keeping Jews in the world after New York City in Israel. So, and part of that, just as a side, is because of all of the Europeans who came to build the canal under the French. Many of those young men stayed, and many of them were Jewish. And so, like in Boquete, there are 9 families who started Boquete after that, and I think 3 or 4 of them were of Jewish origin, German and English. An interesting thing. Panama is hugely, hugely, hugely concentrated in one area. So if you think of Western states like Wyoming or New Mexico, where, you know, 85% of the population lives within an hour's drive of each other, Panama's like that. We live 7 hours away from them. But pretty much most of Panama lives near Panama City. And its literacy rating is only fair, and I'll talk about why that is later. The schools are fair. The economics are good. The average income was $20,000 in 2014. I just looked last night, the 2017 numbers are out, it's gone up to 22,000. And about a quarter of the percentage of population are in poverty, which includes pretty much all of the indigenous and then some other people. And the majority, there's an enormous quantity of a shortage of labor and skilled, particularly engineering and technical jobs. and lots of people who are willing to clean your house. So that's kind of the job distribution. This is shows you where we live versus where the canal is. The canal in Panama City, Colon, which is where the Spanish first came in 1519 to Panama and set up their first, it was actually a very large city for the Spanish. They trading from South America, the silver, through the that area to, so they could take it to Europe. All of that area from Penominee to Panama City is where pretty much 85% of the population lives. The South Peninsula here is the hottest and driest part of Panama. There's a lot of ranching and that kind of farming. And then where we live is in Chiriqui. David is the second largest city in Panama of 200,000. So comparing 3 million to 200,000 is sort of the demographics. And then we live, David is at sea level. It's said to be the hottest city in Central America. It's very hot. And we live about 30 miles from it in the mountains in Boquete, which is where you can see the arrow goes. We are very close to Costa Rica. This is another one of the poleros and that you can, it's very common design, beautiful, beautiful dress on the young women. So, just a few pictures before we get to the political parts. This is Panama City. It's a lovely city. It's often called the Manhattan of Central America because, like Manhattan, it's on rock and it's at sea level, and so it's very filled with skyscrapers. We were just in San Jose, Costa Rica, 3 weeks ago, and San Jose does not have this kind of a skyline because it is in the mountains, much more likely to have earthquakes. Panama City is right on the Pacific Ocean, absolutely gorgeous. When you fly in over it, I mean, it's just beautiful, and has many Spanish churches, a lot of relics still from when the Americans were there with the bases. This is this old city that the Spanish and French had, and then the original Spanish city. So there's something for everyone in Panama. And then, of course, the canal. And if any of you are civil engineers, such as my husband, you will be unbelievably entranced by the canal, which is over 100 years old and continues to operate virtually flawlessly. So it's a very interesting city. If you really ever want to go to Central America, I highly recommend Panama City. One thing that people don't think about, and I hear this and I see this all the time, I recently was posting on some comments on the Washington Post about the caravan, and they were talking about Central Americans, you know, coming from such a hot place, who would want to live there? And I don't think people realize that most Central Americans don't live in hot places. They live in the mountains. San Jose, Guatemala City, Mexico City, and even, you know, Medellin, Colombia, Bogota, Colombia is quite cold. They live at high elevation. Elevation is weather. Panama City, however, is unusual. It's at sea level, so it is hot. It is what people think of in a tropical place. It is very much like Miami. Boquete is at 5,000 feet, or it ranges from 3,500 to 7,500 feet. So the average is 5,000. And we are fairly cool for Central America, so 70 to 83. One thing Boquete does get, you can see Medellin gets about 30 inches of rain a year. Boquete can get 100 to 200 inches of rain a year. So it's very wet.
Can you give us some?
You can have it. I can tell you, when you get over, we have a 5-inch rain gauge in our yard, and when Scott has to go out in the afternoon and empty it out so that we can see what the rest of the rain was for the day. That's kind of rain. And that's why we're here right now, actually. All the North Americans are out of Boquete because this is the worst time of year, and everybody flees Boquete. And then just a few pictures. This is, if Panama is very much a coastal country, very, very narrow, lots of coastline. And so if you love beaches, there's a beach for everyone in Panama, from old and new architecture to the Caribbean and the Pacific. This is one of the reasons why we live in the tropics, because the amount of beauty, the floral beauty, is amazing. Many of these are in our yard. Some of these, like I think the angel's trumpet here, was planted because we saw somebody had pruned one on the side of the road, and we took it home and we put it in as a stick in the ground, and it bloomed. Hibiscus do that. Amaryllis are virtually weeds in our yard. I have to pull them up all the time because they just grow like crazy. And then, you know, ginger. So the range of flowers is amazing, but if some things that do not grow there are like daffodils, because you don't have long days. Our days are pretty much 13 hours of sunlight year-round, so anything that requires a long spring light changing doesn't grow. It's interesting. And then the animals, these are all pictures that I have taken that we have seen, including this lovely little scorpion. At our house, we usually only get the little scorpions. This one was at a hotel we were staying at the beach. The humpback whales, this is a humpback whale we saw just a few weeks ago off of Panama City. And of course, there are monkeys and sloths, butterflies and birds, and I don't have a picture of a tenth of the kinds of birds we've seen because they fly, they don't pose very well. Boquete is also a farming district, so actually we see these guys the most. The chickens wander all over the place, but it's definitely filled with wildlife. And this guy here is a cotamundi, which is a relative of a raccoon. And they're being fed here at the visitor center. They feed them, so you get a rush of them every day. This guy is a rodent. We saw him on one of the old Air Force bases in Panama City. It's about this big. And then, of course, the tarantula. There's some. Also, I don't have any pictures of snakes up here because most of the snakes we've seen are dead. Just so you know. There are a lot of poisonous snakes, of course, being the tropics, but the one that we see the most is the coral snake, and it has a teeny-weeny little mouth with the venom at the back, so you have to be stupid to get it. The one that is most people are the most afraid of is called the Ferdinand's. It's rather large and very aggressive and can jump. And Panamanians kill it on sight. But it's generally out in the field, so the farm workers generally are the one. And it is very, very fatal. But mostly we don't see snakes. It makes you feel better. It makes me feel better.
The jaguar.
Is that a jaguar? That is a jaguar. They are native to Central America. This particular one is at a reserve for, as was the sloth and the monkeys, for animals that are being protected. In the sloths and the monkeys' cases, their mothers were killed often by crossing a road or some sort of construction, and they are being raised here, and then they'll be released into a national park in Costa Rica that's across the border. The jaguar was kept by a wealthy person until it got too big to be a house pet, and of course cannot be released into the wild at this point because it's far too acquainted with humans, and so it's kept at the refuge. And they actually, when we first saw it, they had animals in cages on either side of it, and they've had to remove them because it's very smart at getting animals. And one time we were there, and one of these little guys, the little baby howler monkeys, was on the shoulder of the woman who cares for them and just had a panic attack when she went near the jaguar. So they're definitely not friends of each other's. The howler monkeys are in our neighborhood. In fact, Amy's had bananas stolen from her backyard. This is our house, so you can see, you know, it's when we went to Germany, a lot of people were acting like, do you have electricity? Yes, we have electricity, internet, cars, roads. You know, it's all there. And even baseball, Panamanians are very big baseball fans. There actually are a number of Panamanians who are playing in U.S. baseball teams right now. It's really big. This is Amy at a local sporting our Cherokee colors. So, you know, we live in a subdivision in a house just like many other places. This is Boquete. So you can see we live in the mountains. This is Volcan Buru Volcano. Our house is about there. And the Boquete is in a valley. You can see it's very green. We have all, you know, rainbows regularly. This woman is Nobe, and she's wearing the traditional dress of the Nobe. The Nobe, many of them have moved to the Boquete area, and I'll talk about why, but so there's a lot of Nobe women in town. And then this young woman was at an event we were at a few months ago, and she's wearing a traditional dress of some of the Latino girls in the area. This is a home for some farm workers. So I'm standing up looking down into a farming area, and this is what some of the Nobe family might live in. So now a little bit into what drives us crazy and then what's going on. This is, by the way, the Flower Festival. Boquete has an annual flower festival. Upwards of 100,000 people visit our little town of 20,000, and it's a mess, but it's beautiful. So the expat, like myself, in Panama, moving a different country, has a lot of issues, from little ones. Like, I searched for months to find baking soda, which is very hard for me. I like to bake. I couldn't find it. Scott and I walked through aisle after aisle. We couldn't find it. We found it one day at in the home cleaning section. So this is the baking soda. It says, you know, it's a cleaning product, Hogar. And that's just one of the things that drives you crazy when you move to another country. Just little things like that. I know that people use baking powder soda. Where is it? In the cleaning section. Things like we tried to find some mesh potato mix, and we went through this large modern grocery store in David. I must have spent 45 minutes. And finally I asked, and there's this humongous aisle, longer than the church is, filled with rice products and one little section of potato products. Those kinds of things are the daily sort of, you know, mind jumps that you have. But our issues in Boquete are the roads. I'll show you some pictures later. Infrastructure is a problem. And utilities. Our utilities have a difficult time staying on. And when they do stay on, sometimes you get brownouts. So we've lost a refrigerator and that kind of thing. And this is sort of your daily process of things you're thinking about. You know, when I get up in the morning, I need to make the coffee just to make sure that I have it made before the power might go off. If the power goes off, if we have a storm in the evening, Scott and I go take a bath or shower right now because when the power goes out, our water goes out. You know, so those kinds of things you think about all the time. Do I have all of my electronics on a sufficient quantity? More than one. It has to be more than one surge protector, battery protector, so it doesn't get fried. What kind of filters do I need to the water? You know, you go to a restaurant, should I drink the water? And they're like, oh, man, I should not have drunk that water. That's a very common... When we first moved to Boquete, a friend of ours was feeling ill, and I was apologizing to her, and she said, that's okay, you'll find out that everybody in Boquete is feeling ill most of the time because there's little bugs in the water. But we do drink filtered water. Also, it's very difficult. You would not believe how much this drives North Americans and Europeans crazy, is this customer service issue thing. This is Panamanian, not all over Latin America. So, for instance, Amy's water heater went out a couple months ago. We called the guy. I'll be there this morning. What time? 10 o'clock. Noon we call him. Oh, I haven't been able to be there. I'll be there by 5. Call him at 6. Sorry, wasn't able to get there. Be there tomorrow. Call him 4 or 5 times during the day. Finally, on Saturday, he says, I can be there in the morning, and you tell him, be there after 9:30 because we go to breakfast with friends. We get there, he's not there. We call him at noon. I was there at 8:30. You weren't there. This happens all the time. This is just one example. It's a Panamanian thing, though, because some friends of ours moved to Medellin in Colombia, and they were told their furniture was to be delivered at 10. And so they were at 10 o'clock drinking their coffee, robe on. I mean, they're not going to be. The guys show up. And Cindy, she posts on Facebook, I cannot believe you showed up at 10 o'clock. So that's a very Panamanian thing. And that's one of the things that drives expats absolutely crazy. If you're in any conversation, they'll be discussing the roads, the utilities, or why the contractor hasn't shown up yet. But so now to the more, I guess, more interesting part. Panama, historically, I think everyone knows, was a virtual colony of the United States for 100 years. After the purchase of the building of the canal. There were some wealthy families in Panama who wanted to be separate from Colombia because after they kicked out Spain, and since Spain packing, Colombia grabbed onto a lot of other countries, and the families weren't very happy about that. So when they agreed to let the U.S. come and build the canal, they gave a lot to the U.S., including virtual colony status. The U.S. left, and there's been some difficulty, I think, in taking over ownership of your own country in infrastructure. So a lot of the infrastructure was built and maintained by the U.S. and hasn't been developed much since then. And so that's a point of irritation for everyone who lives in Panama. Another thing that exacerbates this is there are national elections every 5 years. And if you think it's a national election of a country with less than 4 million people, so And when there's a national election, everything changes. So everything from the president to the janitors at your local school can all be just whoosh. So then you have a period of about a year when nothing happens because you have political appointees put in these jobs who may not, usually don't have a clue about what they're doing. So there's, and then when you start a project, the government wants to get something done, president so-and-so promises this, they have to get it all done while that president is still in office. So Martinelli was our last president. He was very effective. He got the Pan American Highway, which does extend all the way through the Americas to Panama, expanded in our area over the mountains to David, and he got it done, and it's wonderful. And he was also working on building hospitals. But then he left office, and it turned out that although he was very effective, he was corrupt, and he's now in prison, as so often happens. And the new president, of course, doesn't want to finish the hospitals that Martinelli started, because that was Martinelli's project. So we have a two-thirds completed hospital sitting in Boquete, which is a point of irritation for every person who lives in Boquete as you drive past it. You know, Varela, on the other hand, whose family, he was elected because he's a wealthy family. They owned the rum producer in Panama, Abuelo, if you're interested. And they thought he's so wealthy he won't be corrupt, which is true. He's only incompetent. So nothing's happened since we've been there. We'll see what happens next. So there's this problem with getting anything done. And this drives Panamanians crazy even more than expats. You sit by the hour and hear the complaints. But one of the things Varela promised is that Boquete is not in the same water system as the rest of the country. Because it started out as a farming community a little over 100 years ago, the farmers all had their own individual lines. And at one point, there were 64 private water systems in a town of 20,000 people. It was a problem. And so he, great project, we're going to build water treatment plants, sewer treatment plants, and we're going to redo it. We're going to put in international-grade pipes and not, you know, half-inch PVC above ground like it's all over. Wonderful idea. The problem is, one of the many problems is that there's a humongous shortage of technical people in Panama because as part of the issue that comes with being a colonial power, there's a feeling of lack of being enough in the Panamanian government. And so no one who is not Panamanian is allowed to work in pretty much any technical career, which is a problem for engineering and technicians because there aren't enough schools, there aren't enough trained people. So that's a problem. And then the second problem is because of corruption in each level of government siphons off its money, and the mayor appoints his brother-in-law to lead the projects, which his brother-in-law doesn't know how to do anything. It's been a mess. So they first put in international-grade pipes. They didn't know how, the guys didn't know how to seal them, so they leaked all over town. They took them out. They put in PVC. The PVC has been crushed, and they're on time number 5. And this is what the main street in town looked like when we left. Supposedly they have gotten it repaved in time for the main parade on the 28th. We'll see what happens, but it'll probably get paved and then turn into this a few weeks later. And this is a problem in Panama. It's not unique to Panama, but it's one of the issues that particularly drives our neighbors, all Panamanians, crazy. Because, you know, it hurts business, it just makes life unpleasant, and I don't know if this issue will get solved. But it's not a social justice issue, it's an engineering issue, I guess. The biggest issue that affects us where we live in Panama, though, is the problems dealing with the Nobe Bugle, who have the largest comarca, and they're about 80% of the indigenous peoples in Panama. The other indigenous peoples generally live near Panama City, the Embra in particular, who also in Colombia, and are much more well integrated into Panamanian society because of the fact of their location. It's easier to get to schools and medicine. Incomes are higher. The Nobe Bugle live in the mountains, very remote sections of the mountains, kind of to the east of us, I guess it would be, and have traditionally been subsistence farmers. There are records of them being there for about 2,500 years. They were not really integrated with the Mayans or the Aztecs or any of those groups that we think of in North America, nor the Incas in South America. They were typically subsistence farmers. And there is very little, almost no archaeological work done on their history. But they have in the recent past, because of the improvements in healthcare, birth rates have gone way up. So a young woman that we know, her name is Candida, is Amy's age, and she has 13 siblings, and she herself has 5 children. This is a family that we know, and that's, so you can see they have a lot of children, so they have very high birth rates, and subsistence farming in a mountain terrain doesn't work well together. So you've had a lot of the young men about 10 years ago started to leave the comarca and go to the area around Boquete to work in the farms, in the coffee farms in particular. Coffee is a huge crop in Boquete. It's what Boquete is known for internationally. And unfortunately, that young men leaving and spending a long time away from home drove what often happens, an enormous increase in sexually transmitted diseases. So AIDS is the 9th largest cause of death in Panama. Most of them are among the indigenous. It's exacerbated by the fact that healthcare, although it is a right in Panama and the public system is virtually free, but because of the location where a lot of the families live, they don't get a lot of healthcare. And so it causes death in a large proportions in Panama. Another problem that has happened is that traditionally families ate a mixture of rice and a bean that's like a lentil, called a guandu, and the guandu actually has a lot of protein. As families have gotten more money, more access to Western goods, the diet has switched to like rice and soda or something, basically. When we see the guys coming home on Saturday afternoons with their paychecks after stopping at the grocery store, there'll be 25 pounds of rice and, you know, and sodas and chips and candies. So the amount of diabetes in Panama is through the roof. It is unbelievable. We have a friend who is training to become a nurse assistant, and he was told that it's one of the primary, and I looked online last night, and it's actually now considered to be the primary cause of medical issues in Panama is diabetes, and it's very high, particularly among women. So if you think about a Nobe young woman living on the comarca, will have her first child at 12 or 13, have 8 or 9 children, and then possibly die in her 30s or 40s of something related to diabetes. That's a very common life trajectory for a lot of the women on the comarca. It is better for women in the Boquete area because of their access to education and medical care. So you have this issue, and then because of the poverty and the food that is available and food that is eaten, malnutrition is very high. We've been told by people at a local treatment center that 40% of the children in Cherokee are malnourished. Most of them are Nobe Bugle. So malnutrition is a serious problem. It leads to all kinds of other health problems, and the diabetes. Because of where the families live, these are two houses just down the street from us. This has 4 houses. They're each 10 by 12. 4 families live in there. That has 2 houses. It's better. It's on a farm. It's each 10 by 12. This is the kitchen facility. And then the outhouse will be out back. Because of the living facilities, a lot of the Nobe Bugle live in. There's also, the children quite commonly have parasites. And there's a lot of other health problems. So the health problems are huge. Dental problems are unbelievable. A couple we know who are missionaries took about 12 children in their neighborhood to the dentist and spent hundreds of dollars at less expensive dental rates to get the kids' mouths fixed, because if you think about it, if you're eating rice and drinking soda, it's just horrible. So there are all of these health problems that happen in the community. And all related to a lot of this is the fact that there's education, although it's a national right and a national requirement, children are required to go to school until they're 15. For a lot of these children, particularly in the comarca, if you are 5 hours walking across rivers without bridges from the local school, you might not go to school, particularly if you're a girl. And most of the parents, particularly the mothers, are illiterate and don't see the need for the schools. And so there's not a lot of education, particularly in the comarca. It's a problem. And the school, the government has a difficult time recruiting teachers to go to the Comarca because, as a friend of ours told us, his girlfriend graduated from college in David, and she had two choices as a new teacher. She could either work in the Comarca or in one of the poor neighborhoods in Panama City. And she went to Panama City because she said, I don't want to live 5 hours on the bus, 5 hours walking up a mountainside in a shack with snakes for company among in a Nobe tribe as a single woman, as a teacher. And so it's very difficult to find teachers. Part of the issue what she's mentioned as living as a single woman is that there is also a very high percentage of alcoholism, particularly among the Nobe. This is a problem that is seen all over the Americas, the alcoholism with indigenous people, and it's exacerbated by the fact that beer is very cheap in Panama. You can get it for 50 cents a can. So it's really cheap, and a lot of these young men are away from home most of the time, hanging out together, so there's enormous alcoholism. And what happens, unfortunately, a lot of times there's alcoholism that leads to abuse and, in fact, even murder. There was a woman in our community a couple months ago who was murdered. She was raped by a gang of five men. She was on the way to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the men had just left the bar after drinking all night on a Saturday night and killed her. And so that is a problem that might happen to a woman in a Nobe village. There are enormous social problems, political problems, and then discrimination problems, as often is the case with this. So a lot of people discriminate against the Nobe. The current Miss Panama is Nobe for the first time ever, and one of the things she's trying to work on is this discrimination in education for girls, and I really wish her the best on that. There's a lot of other efforts going on that I'll mention, but so that is the biggest social issue we have in our area and really that Panama has. I will have to say the government of Panama, though, is working on this issue in a lot of sources. And we do not have a situation like Honduras or Nicaragua or Salvador or Guatemala where the government takes the land, throws people in jail, kills them. So it is something that people are working on, but there's much that needs to be done. There's always something positive to think about. This young woman that I mentioned, Candida, who's Amy's age and has five children, she refused to move back to the Comarca when her husband left her because she wanted to keep her kids in school. And that's just, you know, that sort of thing is happening more and more, that things are slowly, education is happening. I mean, education is always a successful thing. And so we're working on that. Some of the other issues that Panama has, I mentioned the violence against women. This is particularly a problem, as I mentioned, among the indigenous communities, but it's all over Latin America. It's a big movement. The Ni Una Menos is all over Latin America. We recently had a demonstration after the murder and rape of the woman, and these are from that demonstration. It's something that is a problem people are working on, but definitely crime against women is pretty substantial in Panama. There's ineffective policing. Part of that comes from the Noriega time. After he used the police as his personal gang, and so after he left, the police were pretty much denuded of any power. And also with that, there's a law that they cannot punish minors for any crime. And so, of course, any theft that happens in Panama is generally committed by someone under 18, so they can't punish them. So there's that issue. We don't have a lot of murder or that type of crime in Panama. Last year, about 400 Panamanians were killed, which is about the same number as those who died in car accidents, and probably 90% of them were young men taking drugs, kind of deaths. But there's a lot of assault on women or petty theft. Another problem is Panama is dirty. There is so much litter. This is a beach that we went to. I took this photo. I first took the beautiful picture of the beach for Instagram, and then I took this picture to the side. Litter is a problem. There's very little recycling in Panama, which is interesting because Costa Rica and Colombia on either side have beautiful recycling programs. There's, you know, Costa Rica. In fact, we in our volunteer group ship our recycling to Costa Rica so that it can be recycled. But Panama does not have that. Panama has a problem with trash collection. It also seems to have a cultural history that does not deal well with picking up after oneself. You see this, you know, the kids coming home from school just dropping their trash all the way as they go. And it's something that is also being worked on by the government, but it's a cultural change. I know in the United States, they've been, ever since I was a toddler, there have been, you know, is education on littering. And this is something that is just starting in Panama. So this is a problem, and it hurts Panama's tourism because this is kind of not something that's real attractive to tourists. And then another problem that is very severe, particularly in our area, is animal abuse. This is one of, four or five times a week, they find an animal like this, they post it on our Boquete News website, can somebody help take care of this dog? There's a law recently passed in Panama that makes it illegal to chain a dog, not feed the dog, but it's in particularly in poor communities, not very well followed, and there's not a lot of governmental resources to take care of the animals. This is traditionally because dogs were seen only as guard dogs. Even our neighbors, really lovely people, three animals, it's not a part of the family, so the dogs and cats stay outside all the time. They're not a part of the family. And then for a family who doesn't have any money and traditionally doesn't see a dog as a living creature, the animals are often mistreated. There are some programs that help this, and I'll mention those later. And also one of the things that I think is really wonderful is the government of Panama is working with one of our organizations to bring puppies into schools and get children to play with them, so that they begin to learn to treat the puppies as a living being with feelings. And so all of these things are in process, but there's still an awful lot, unfortunately, of this kind of abuse. Amy's dog that she has was a rescue, and she, at 8 years old, still has scars in areas with no fur on her body from where she was beaten as a puppy. It's very common. But as I've mentioned, there's a lot being done to help. And I want everyone to know that this is not just an expat thing that is, many of these organizations, most of them are led by local Panamanians. And to be perfectly honest, most of them are led by Panamanian women who are leading a lot of these issues. There are governmental laws, as I've mentioned, on animal cruelty, child protection. There's a governmental agency called the Corregidor. And it's like an ombudsman. They're outside of the legal process. They're all women. And they are designed to help victims deal with local crime. And the Corregidor is somebody you go to for all kinds of things. My neighbor's party went on till 5 o'clock in the morning, and the Corregidor shuts it down to so-and-so's beating his wife kind of a thing. And that was a governmental agency that was particularly set up to help people. Education is, of course, mandated, and more training has been implemented, particularly for adult women. As you can see here, these women are in a nutrition class talking about the importance of getting protein and that kind of thing to their children. There's a lot more of that. And one of the things, Amy is making a blanket right now, and the blankets are made for poor babies, but one of the things that happens with some of those blankets is they're used to bribe the mothers. We'll give you blankets and food and clothing for your kids if you come to this nutrition class. It's very effective. As you can see, a lot of the mothers are there listening. Also, the Panamanian government is working very closely with the United Nations, the U.S. Peace Corps, and many other organizations to provide help in the communities. We had Scott and I went to a lecture, a young Peace Corps volunteer who was working in the villages to help families build stoves made out of concrete block to cook in so that the fire was not in the house, giving the children asthma, which is why the Panamanian government funded it, and helped the families learn, and they were specifically training women how to build these fire pits that where the smoke was directed away from the house. That's one activity. The government also coordinates It has some of these organizations, such as Nucha Hogar, the Fundación Pro Integración. They are funded by the government. They're primarily supported, actually, by charitable contributions. Nucha Hogar is an organization all over Panama, and they this is one in David. They take in the most severely malnourished children who have to be, actually, these children have been referred from the hospital. And for a period of about 6 to 8 months, they help these children recuperate their health while also educating the parents on nutrition. Fundación Pro Integración is a program all over Panama that has the services for handicapped children and adults, which is really wonderful. And actually, one of the good things that the missionaries do is there is a missionary group that sends down a container every few months filled with medical supplies. So everything from walkers to artificial limbs, and a lot of that goes to the Fundación. There are charitable organizations. These are just a few that we're aware of because we're involved with them. Buenos Vecinos gives food baskets every month to about 150 local families. Our knitters and crocheters and quilters, we make the blankets and sweaters and hats for preemies, the children who are malnourished, or the children in the cancer hospital in David. Amigos de Animales, which Scott and Amy are part of for 10 years, has had a monthly, very low-cost cost clinic where stray animals are neutered. Which, if you've ever been to someplace like Thailand and you come, or India, and you come out and you're swarmed with stray dogs who are mean and violent, you'll understand the importance of neutering 15,000 dogs, because we don't have that problem in Boquete. So there are stray dogs, but there aren't very many, and because of that, you don't get that whole too many dogs, violent response, violent dog situation where people are being attacked in the streets. And that's a good organization. And then coordinating with Amigos de Animales is the Salvadores de Animales, and they are the rescue organization. They rescue that dog that you saw a picture of was rescued by Salvadores de Animales. It was placed in a foster home until it could be rehabilitated and then adopted out to a family. They prefer to adopt them out to local Panamanian families because the North Americans tend to leave regularly, either go back to the States or go on another country. You really don't. You know, you want an animal in a permanent home. And then there are a lot of community groups, like this group that we were involved in. It just started a year ago. It's a recycling initiative, and it's all volunteer. So we work about 5 days a month sorting recycling, and a lot of other people, you know, in the community are also doing that. The community itself has had a lot of community meetings, protests, primarily in the issues I've mentioned, infrastructure, violence against women, and increasing customer service, community services. An interesting thing about Central America is the most common form of protest is people block the highway. So this happens in Panama. It's happening right now in Costa Rica. They're having a national strike. There was recently, the most recent one that I'm aware of in Panama, there was a young teacher and three of her students who were killed while crossing a river to get to the school. And the government, and the horrible response, blamed the teacher because she hadn't heard the information that the government had put out the day before on the internet, which, by the way, they didn't have internet in that village, that told people that there was a hurricane watch because a hurricane was forming off of the coast of Costa Rica, so people should be careful. So they said, well, she should have been careful. She should have listened to our warning, and it was her fault. People were very upset about this, as you might imagine. And so hundreds of people protested across the Pan-American Highway, stuffing all traffic, and nothing gets at least the Panamanian government interest faster than business being stopped, so they're now working on that issue. So those kinds of those community activities are happening more and more in Panama. And then finally, these are the organizations we're involved in. We're a little bit busy. The Sterilization Clinic, Knitters Clinic, the Fundación, Recycling Group. This is our Democrats Abroad group up here. The Raquel's Ark, the Animal Shelter, Recycling, Nutra Hogar. We also have started a Unitarian group that meets once a month at our house. These are the kinds of things that are happening, and you can see that they're very community involved. Mixture of local residents and expats, and it's a sort of thing that really makes you feel good about a community. That's one of the reasons we moved to where we did, because Boquete has this reputation of being the sort of community that is doing these things and working to solve these problems. And it's something I think that as if people, as citizens, we need to think about with all the complaints that comes out of Washington about immigration, that perhaps if we were doing a few more of these kinds of things in the communities in Honduras and Nicaragua, that fewer people would see the need to escape their homes. So that's what I have to tell you from Panama. I hope it's been of interest to you and maybe given you some ideas for things that can be done here in Hayward.